What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour number five of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day. Got an NFL draft. Big board report. Okay, and before we get there, we have an update on the Cowboys defensive coordinator search. Here's Zach Wolchuk with the details on DeMarcus Covington.
Yes, DeMarcus Covington was with the Packers this past season as their defensive line run game coordinator. Prior to that, he was in New England for 8 seasons, and he actually was the Patriots defensive coordinator in 2024. And that defense, not bad. Helped the team rank number 10 in the NFL in passing defense, number 5 in both explosive plays allowed. And that's something where I think the Cowboys certainly are going to be focusing on, right? I mean, explosive plays were the story of the defense this year. It was like, hey, here's a 20-plus yarder. So those are good things. He was also New England's outside linebacker coach in 2019. Helped Jamie Collins Sr. Come along, have one of his best years. Prior to joining the Pats, he spent 5 seasons at the college level at UT Martin, Ole Miss, UAB, but won a Super Bowl with the Patriots there under Bill Belichick and did a great job this past season with Green Bay and has had a year as a defensive coordinator. So another one on the list. I think we're up to 8 candidates now, and all of them seem to have something on the resume that you like.
You know, I just the other thing I'm liking about this, though, is just like it seems like they're calling around and saying, who is the smartest football coach that's a riser that, you know, we want to interview that guy. What I'm learning about Shoddy is he's got the grinder gene.
Uh-huh.
You know, he cannot get burnt out in his pursuit of great football because he's got a burning desire to prove himself. And damn it, that's what this organization needs, to cut through the complacency, to cut through the billionaire country club lifestyle and culture that the Jones boys have established. And when you get passionate about something and you can go for weeks, some people can go for months, and then you have your Tiger Woods and your Peyton Mannings and your Tom Brady's and your Kobe Bryant's who will just never get tired of it.
Yeah.
And that's such an advantage because for the majority of us, it will massively impact our mental health. About 45 days in, you're like, well, yeah. Boy, I need to get some work-life balance. I need to get away. And, you know, for Shoddy to be doing this, I also think this is contagious. You know, it's going to rub off on other people. If he's looking for, you know, all of his coaches to sort of share this trait with him, where there's a tireless appetite for learning more and figuring things out, like, that is going to deliver. That's how Belichick kept coming up with all those things in the playbook.
Yes.
You know, where that's how Belichick figured out, well, maybe we should cheat like this or cheat like that because nobody's actually watching and we can get away with this and harvest an advantage. I mean, in a salary cap league where everybody's got 7 picks every year, it is built to go 8-8. Mike Fisher used to famously say that with us all the time. So how do you harvest microscopic advantages and have those pile up to the point that it reaches a critical mass? And at that point, you got yourself one of the best coach football teams in the NFL. I think it's just a matter of time for Shoddy. So DeMarcus Covington there, appreciate that. We go to Nick Harris in the Star Telegram. He wrote about 10 players the Cowboys could take with their 2 picks in the draft. I'll just go through some of these. And I want updated thoughts from you guys on a couple of questions I have as I'm watching these players and trying to figure out where my observations fit in the grand scheme of things. We've debated a lot about Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State. If he's there at 12 and the Cowboys take him, I think everybody's going to be pretty excited about that. Yeah. Reuben Bain, the edge from Miami. Brian, I wonder with him how much his lack of prototype traits is going to make some teams hesitate. I just think this guy is so powerful and so quick. I don't care how he's built. He's going to get to the quarterback. Like he could be the Aaron Donald of edges.
Yeah, this is the thing. He, matter of fact, on the stack tomorrow, when Zach and Aisha and I are going to talk about players that body types don't fit how they play. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, we're gonna do that tomorrow and kind of kick that around because there's several players in this draft. Bain is one of them that he doesn't look like a traditional edge rusher, but then you kind of have to say, well, wait a minute now, when you do play him on the edge. Is he just as good or as the guys who you think are edge rushers? You know, I think there's people that have him. Bailey at Texas Tech fits people's eyes.
Yeah.
For sure. I think Baines, he doesn't really fit everybody's eyes, and I think you're on to something. But I know a lot of people are looking at the production and how you could possibly play him at the as an edge, as a tackle. I think that's where people are going to kind of say, oh, well, this guy's a weapon in multiple ways of how you can use him.
I mean, typically you want guys that are really slippery and tall and angular. You're going to slip on by.
Yeah, he didn't fit your eye.
I think what Bane does, though, is he challenges you with power so much that you have to anchor. Which buys him less. He needs less space to get around because he has guys worrying about him getting his hands on you, and then you're just going to get tumped over. Let's go to linebacker Sonny Styles, Ohio State. Missed only two tackles this season. They both came against Indiana in the last game that he played. So, you know, how much can you live with lack of violence or pop in a guy? I think is the question I'm asking myself. If he just gets the job done, it's not aesthetic. It's not badass. But he is very athletic. I think he made Bruce Feldman's freaks list.
And
he's so long and in position that it's like, okay, so what? Your middle linebacker isn't violent. He just does not miss tackles. And that's, you know, that's definitely worth something. But my next question, it more specifically on this, so many of the great defenses have linebackers who are dropping in zone and are weapons in the pass game. And the way that they're being deployed is giving teams a pretty substantial advantage. Like, I don't know if you can find a great defense that's not getting incredible pass defense from their middle linebacker. How much confidence do you guys have him in that specific part of the job? And how much would that weigh your decision-making against other more traditional linebacker traits that maybe he's not a 10 out of 10 in?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the thing is for me, like, he's an ascending player. So I think that he's learning the position. You've seen him learning and growing at the position. But the coverage stuff, I mean, being the converted safety, that's where he can excel. So the movements for him, the athleticism for him, he has that in droves that other linebackers don't have. He just possesses just
feel
a
for
unique,
it.
Yeah, just a unique, he understands it, right? I mean, you can see him, the awareness that he has in the middle passing game, especially just understanding the crossing patterns, like all the mesh concepts that teams are deploying right now, he can see that coming from a mile away. The processing with him is very evident. I think he does play physical. The issue is he just needs to get a little bit stronger, right? Now, I think at 6'4", 222, he's got the frame to do it. I think he's a very willing tackler. You saw him immediately as soon as he transitioned to linebacker. The tackle numbers are just crazy. But yes, I mean, you're right. He's not going to give you the pop that like an Anthony Hill Jr. would for right now when you're watching him play. But I think Styles can certainly develop into that guy. I think the potential for him is through the roof, and he can really end up being a Fred Warner, one of the best linebackers in the sport when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think Zach's got him nailed pretty good. The thing about him is the fact he is a former safety. I think he has the instincts in it to play. If you ask me other linebackers that probably could be really good cover guys, I'm going to have to say I think Hill, because of his ability at Texas, the way he's able to run, the way he's able to be able to, like, if he has to deal with somebody with some quickness or with some shiftiness, I think he'd handle it. Rodriguez is the other one from Tech. Yep. He's the other one.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
I think those are the two. If you said, hey, give me the two linebackers, or give me the linebackers that you feel like can cover and feel like play downhill and be physical and all that, I feel like that Styles and Hill and then also, though, Rodriguez would be those guys. The other linebackers, like I said, I think there's some limitations to really what C.J. Allen can do as far as some cover stuff. But the physicality, the tackle stuff is all – if you're looking for complete guys, I think the guys I named on the back end there are the ones that you would want to maybe look at drafting.
And you got to be born to do this?
I think there's a reason why guys like Sean Lee and Leighton Vander Esch and our guy Roquan Smith and guys like that play. They have this ability, this instinct to kind of know where they need to fit or if they have to drop or they're able to read or somebody tries to fool them. I think some linebackers are just – there's some good-looking linebackers that don't have those types of instincts, and you can't – I don't think I would put C.J. Allen in any quick-twitch cover guy snaps.
Agreed. Yeah.
I don't think I would.
It's kind of like being a point guard in basketball.
But everything else about him is pretty
damn –
You've
got to have a sixth sense.
You either have the floor vision.
You do. You have you to don't. See it or you don't. Yeah.
We got David Bailey and Mansoor Delane and C.J. Allen on this list. We're going through Nick Harris' top 10 players that could be candidates for the Cowboys at 12 and 20. Cassius Howell, and Nick did a nice job here pointing out the inconsistencies with his pass rush. His sacks came in bunches.
Yeah.
He didn't have a sack in half the games. Six of his 11 were in two games. So, I don't know how much is that a concern when you don't see the guy showing up in every – for me, I think the Cowboys need a situational pass rusher so bad. Like, they're going to be able to stop the run. They need a guy to hunt quarterbacks in obvious passing downs, and I think Howell could do it immediately.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, Dawson, because this guy plays in a two-point stance really the whole game. I mean, he's playing standing up. And the one thing that you see with him is that he does have pass rush moves.
Yeah,
it is like the cross chop, the SWAT, the ability to spin, speed
Euro
to power.
Step.
Yeah, he's got all those things. You kind of that. Now I said the same thing, Zach, last year about Donovan Ezeraku. You know, and all of a sudden he's running down the middle of people. You know, I don't know what happened there. Maybe he'll get better at it. But I'll say this though, just how he gets to the ball from a 2-point stance and that kind of that explosiveness. Is really impressive. Not even a hand down on the ground guy. I mean, he's a stand up and go rusher.
Jermaine McCoy. The question there is, could they take another injured corner? You got Deron Bland. You got Savone Revel.
This is what's going to happen. Right now, we're talking about an injured corner. We're a year removed from him being.
He's going to go blow up the combine.
He's going to go. I bet you anything. He's going to go get tested at the combine. He's probably going to run. He's going to have a pro day. There's not going to be a question about him being ready.
Should be a top 10 pick.
He should. But if teams don't fall in love, this is where Delane from LSU comes into play. To me, it's really close between the two. The biggest difference is one played this year and one didn't. That's the thing that you have to look at.
So he puts Keldrick Falcon here as well, the edge from Auburn.
He loves him.
He didn't until yesterday.
Oh, did he get crushed?
Well, he did not like him, and then he went back and rewatched him, and now Nick likes him more.
So he didn't like him, and now he likes him.
He felt.
I know that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He likes the
now
guy.
Now he likes him.
Yeah, I was with the draft show going off yesterday. They were talking about him, and Nick, me personally, guy is a really good player, but I can't, in good conscience, say 6'6", 285. Where's the consistency with the rush?
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of guys like that, and Nick will say, "Oh, well, go back and watch." Go back and watch 2024. I'm like, okay, I'll go back and watch 2024. But I'm watching 2025, and I'm watching a 6'6", 285-pound guy that's not turning the corner on people.
Yeah.
That's my issue right now.
He looks well coached. He's got strong hands. He's got moves, but there's just not enough juice in there.
I think he should Devin Clowney. I really do. Yeah. Like, that's kind
and
of
that
my
And that was
com-com.
The first overall pick.
Okay. Spencer Fano says it's realistic he could fall to 20. Says Mal Noah at 12 is also an idea, but maybe not what the Cowboys would do. I think that's a good point right there.
Let me tell you what. If I got wiped out at 14, if all of a sudden we're talking about a corner, or we're talking about one of these linebackers, or we're talking about one of these edges, and we start to get a little wiped out. These quarterbacks start to slide, and now guys are picking. I wouldn't be opposed to dropping back out of 14 a little bit and taking the offensive tackle from Miami.
That would be something.
I would not be opposed to that at
all. How are they
going to
look at what they want in their tackle? Is Fano a candidate? Like, he's the athlete, but they like people movers.
That's what I'm saying.
That's why Malanoa might
that's
be
why
a guy.
Malanoa. That's, to me, Fano is one of these guys at Utah. When you watch him play against Bailey from Texas Tech. That'll be a little eye-opening to you right there. The way that Bailey got after
him. It was early in the game, and then he adjusted really well. I thought you saw him learn and adjust. Romu got his ass kicked on the other side. I thought
Romu gave him issues,
the left
that's
tackle.
Right, yeah.
But I thought Fano, I thought that was really good teach tape there because Bailey had his number.
Right.
And then by the second half rolls around, he did a good job of shutting the rush down. So you know, Fano, to me, is the athlete with the great feet that I think is going to be a good player. But if you want the mauler that's going to be nasty and bully people, Malinois is your guy. And I think both are top 15 picks.
308, 306 to 318 maybe.
Yeah.
He
might be even heavier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks, I know Aisha Morrison, we were talking about again on the show last week.
Because he's got the guard body type.
He does. There's your guard body type. He looks kind of square, kind of boxy. He's not going to have great range with the kick slide stuff. I mean, he's just so powerful the way he plays.
And he's still fairly athletic.
Yeah.
He's not like a plotter.
But he's not like the Utah athletes, is what he's not.
No, but I was reading Crystal Ball's thoughts on him, and he was just talking about his muscle density.
Yeah.
Like every muscle group on his body is just so much more compact.
He is thick. I mean, he's thick like Booker, you know?
Thick as a bowl of oatmeal.
Okay, three of us are girl dads here in the room. Are your girls going to play sports, you think, Chief Wolchuk?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm hoping so.
I think I've hacked how to get your kids in whatever sport you want, okay? Ooh. Now, I'm on my second go-around. I got a 14 and a 4, and with Abby, I was trying to teach her things at a young age, thinking it was going to keep her ahead of the curve, like a head start in whatever sport she wanted. But that, you know, for an independent young kid, they can't follow directions that well, and maybe your kid is like super locked in with attention span, and they're going to listen to everything you say and try to mimic it and everything. So I guess this would be a PSA, a sports dad PSA, not for those folks. And if you got one of those kids that's driven, like tell me more, I want to learn. You know, that kid might be that kid's going to maximize their potential. But for the rest of us, what you do is you get that ball out or whatever the thing is. And you just follow your kid around and do play-by-play of them doing it, and then overreact whenever they do something good.
Okay.
Wow.
Love this.
That's all I do. I'm like, hey, Remy, let's play. What do you want to do? She wants to play soccer now constantly because I let her dribble around the house, and then whenever she kicks the ball, I yell, go! You know?
And she loves it.
I talk about how fast she's running. The thing is kids, they really want to they want to prove that they're awesome at something, you know, and they can do it by themselves. They don't want to have it explained to them, like, here's how you do it.
Right.
They want to believe that they're, you know, just rocking and rolling so much they're making their parents excited about what they do. And as I'm reflecting on that with the kids that are the best, it's usually the thing that hooks them is that roar of the crowd, right? So I think the trap that most sports parents fall into is trying to over-educate their kid too early. And it turns it into, like, learning, like, almost school, or they're being taught to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty stoked. I think she's gonna crush four-year-old soccer out there in Forney.
I believe it, dude. You should be doing play-by-play of those games.
Yeah, yeah, that would be fun.
The voice of Forney.
We could get that on Facebook.
So you're playing inside the house soccer?
Yeah.
You're not breaking anything yet?
No, she's getting close, you know. And obviously, you want a lighter Nerf ball or something like that. You're just dorking around getting the basic game actions down.
That's so cool. That's brilliant, dude. You've hacked it.
I have. Yeah.
I'm going to try this.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good advice.
It's tough because you want to get in there and teach him something. Right. But there's plenty of time.
Right.
There's
right.
years and years and years. And the thing is, if later in life they love the game because they have all these lived experiences of it, you know, making themselves proud of themselves for how they got the reaction from the adults, that's it right there. All right.
That's beautiful.
All right. I know there's a lot of sports dads out there, and I see them on the sidelines, and they're frustrated trying to dictate to their 6-year-old what to do to get the job done right. And the kid's miserable out there because dad's just yelling at them, giving them instructions right and left.
It makes you not want to do it.
Okay. We got a sports hodgepodge coming up next, Chief. Where are you taking us?
College football and Cooper Flag. Let's do this thing next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.